This is Bach to Bach, the podcast opening up the world of classical music one beer at a time.
And today we are finally talking about Mozart. So welcome to episode 70. We're in the final 30 before 100.
This is it. We actually just had a little bit of a tiff about what should stay in. So there are bloopers out there, folks. We have bloopers as we record this podcast.
Yeah, I deleted a lot of them by accident.
They do involve a bit of swearing and speaking in accents. So we're saving those for another day.
You'll never hear it.
But today's huge. We get to talk about Mozart, favorite composer of all time.
Yeah, I hate him so much. So let me back up. There are a few things about Mozart I do enjoy. His string quartet works pretty good. He did lay the foundation, but really today's piece in its entirety is one of the few where I'm like, I got to back up. He's like, he got it right. But he died before it was finished. So, like, did he get it right?
But, Kev, he also started writing music at the age of 4.
I mean, like, so did I, but, like, you don't see me bragging about it.
I mean, we have to put in perspective.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I'm thinking about pooping. Sorry. The whole different thing.
How old was he when he died? How old was he?
He was 35.
So, he was younger than I am when he died, and look at and his works have endured.
How bad do you feel about yourself?
I know, right? Okay. I'm going to take a break just to like pace the hallway, I think, a little bit.
Okay. Well, so he was, I will get this. Like he was a genius. He was incredible. Mozart was just, he was revolutionary. No question. I just don't enjoy his music personally.
That makes me feel a bit better about my self-esteem now, all things considered. But you
like,
still have
like
a
you're a decent guy.
Thanks.
At best.
I appreciate that.
You have a nose. I mean you're crushing it.
A winning smile.
You have a smile. That's not a winning one, but it's a smile.
But how do we top of our head, do we know how many hundreds, potentially thousands of pieces Mozart composed in his lifetime?
I'm gonna say ballpark because I looked it up. Between 500 and 600 pieces.
You
of
are
music.
So full of it.
So I said, look it up.
How many? Five?
Roughly, like if I had to guess based on Wikipedia, 600.
Well, we'll go by Wikipedia. Okay. Well,
incredible.
That's a monumental, for being 35 years old at the time of death, like that's a monumental accomplishment.
I mean, he was a prodigy in his like single digits as a musician. That's incredible.
Yeah.
But today we're going to kind of like tie in a lot of like little things into the Mozart Requiem today.
I was really good with crayons at that age. Just saying.
At 35?
No, I'm still okay. I'm not good with them now.
Okay.
So we're going to tie in bits with the Mozart Requiem.
Yeah. So before we go into the music, what is like in store for the beer today?
This is fun. So I don't know if folks actually knew because I kept it kind of quiet, but last week I traveled over to England. To see very close friends and just lovely people. And while we were there, we had to check out a local brewery while we were there. So I spent a little bit of time outside London and then went up to Suffolk on the eastern coast. And while we were there, we checked out Station 119, which, like a lot of American breweries, is located in an industrial park. And we can go into this a bit as we talk about it later on after the music, but that there's a reason why breweries have helped bring up local economy because of where they're located, the pricing. And this is, I think, another one of those examples, but Station 119 has so many cool stories behind it. It is named after one of the US Air Force bases that was there during World War II. And all the beers are named after heroic wartime animals that have just in their own right and amazing stories,
but also like animals that you don't expect.
Oh yeah, like, we're talking a donkey, a bear,
and
a carrier pigeon, an Alsatian Collie cross, Like it's and a cat and a cat. We'll get so there. So whether you're a cat or a beer lover or both, stick around because we have got a lot to dive into.
If you're a cat lover, find a new podcast. I'm sorry. So I'm going to say that personally.
Well, that means mom's right out.
Womp womp. So, okay. Sorry. But let's go back to Mozart for a second. So again, we are focusing on his Requiem Mass, which a Requiem Mass was basically written for those. It's a liturgical mass for the time when basically when someone passes away. It's more based around death. And sadly, he wrote this in 1791. Right before he died. So he was 35 years old, born in 1756, and died in December 5th, 1791, which is insane. Like, he was 35. He was so young. And he only completed really about three movements of this mass. And really, it was just like more like outline forms of what he actually composed. And what we're going to listen to are the really the elements that he composed himself today, not the composers that tried to finish it off for him, but really what he came to the table with initially and like what his ideas were. And that's what we're focusing on for today's episode. So to back up, a Requiem Mass is based in Latin text. So everything that's sung is all in Latin. And you have your introduction. And then the first one usually after that is the Kyrie, which is based in almost all Latin masses, whether it's about death or not. It's just a Kyrie is a very standard part of a Latin mass. And that is one of the three parts that he really composed himself. And it's a fugue, which you talked about a lot in the past. Yeah, it's a vocal fugue. Now, this is for a full choir plus orchestra. After that, we will hear the Dies Irae, which is really a Latin mass for the dead specifically. And then an offertorium is what's usually heard in the middle of a mass, and usually where you tithe or you give in the name of God. And this was the third one of the three movements that he really planned out. So the reason this really oddly falls this week is for two reasons. One, the composer that finished off this entire work, his Mozart Requiem, was his last name was Süssmayr. He was a German composer. And he actually completed this work in honor of his late wife, who died on Valentine's Day.
Oh, right. Which is
this Friday, this week. Yeah. So it's actually did not plan on that happening, but after researching, it was funny how that, not funny, but just serendipitous how that lined up.
Right.
But the other part of that, which is sadly applicable, is that our Matthew, if I ever said that before.
Technically my name.
Yeah. Maddie's and I, our orchestra teacher from high school, just passed away this past weekend. And very unexpectedly, he was the reason, like one of the big reasons I'm doing what I'm doing today, went into music in the first place. He really gave us all a home when we were in high school as far as being musicians and having a place that we could feel comfortable, but also really a haven for being musicians.
He was the first person to really introduce you to music theory, right?
Yeah. And even though like he was the quirkiest dude, but man, like he cared so much about like exposing you to all realms of music. Wanted you to feel happy and feel like that, like being a musician was this really, really incredible haven to come back to. And like whatever you're going through, you have music there for you. And that was huge, especially in high school, because it's a time where you're trying to find yourself, discover yourself, figure out what you love and what you don't. And if you could have this one place where you can go to and have it be tailored to you, that was really important. And we called him Uncle Jeffy, but
that's right.
He really did that for us. And so hearing the news of his passing was really hard, because he was a great, great educator and a great, great man. Just like we were both so lucky to have him as a teacher.
Someone who just was dedicated to spreading music. I mean,
this is almost 20 years ago for you. This is 19 years ago for you.
Exposing music of all types to
I remember like
to we, people we, of all types.
And it's just incredible what the power of music can do and what one person can do in that realm. And so when you have someone that writes a Requiem Mass based on someone else's life, there is something behind that more than just the music itself. It's the sentiment, it's the impact that piece makes for somebody else. So whether it's a Requiem Mass based on someone who's passed away, or in dedication to, or whatever it is. There's a reason, and there's a sentiment, and there's a reason why someone did that in the first place.
Right.
And it's so just incredible. So these three movements we're talking about today that Mozart originally either fully wrote or created the outlines and structure for will be the Kyrie, followed by the Dies Irae, and then the Offertorium. And this is part of a larger, like almost hour-long work by Mozart. And I will say it is his greatest work to date, no question. It is just absolutely brilliant. I sadly think on his deathbed, he's writing this, and his best work is being put out to the world. But he had to get it out of his system, or he was called to get it out of his system and put it out to the world before he passed away. And it just really is so, so incredible what he has. He set the bar for future composers, but also on top of that, what he really, he set the standard. Even though I don't like his music generally, he set the standard.
Right.
And it's incredible. So please thoroughly just turn up the volume on these three movements of Mozart's Requiem and come back. We'll talk about all things English beer related.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
but
cheers.
Enjoyed this.
And thank you. Thank you. Yep.
No, say what you just said.
It's so freaking awesome.
It is.
It's just like...
blows you away. Like, there's no other word for it.
No,
it blows you away.
It really is. Like, we just, we went, listened through it all, listened to the Kyrie last, and it's just like, it is just like that double fugue in that movement. Just the amount of vocal dexterity in the first place to sing that, and you think this is, doing the math again, 229 years ago.
You are good at this. You're getting quite good at the old backwards maths.
We'll get there. Nice. But it's just, man, it's brilliant. It really is just brilliant.
Like, I don't have, you've played it though, right?
I've played and sung it both, the entire
time. I've not played it though.
Yeah, it's.
I'm curious because the violin parts are everywhere.
It's not as intense as a cellist, but like really vocally, it really is.
It's not as intense as the cellist.
Well, it's not. It's, as a cello player, it's you're a basso continuo part for this though. You but like are. As a vocalist, this is your focus, and it takes so much dexterity to sing it, and so much just training, and it's insane to see what came out of this at the end of his life, like literally the tail end of his life. It's just, yeah, it's mind blowing.
How do I follow that talking about beer?
English act like it's the end of their life?
Well, I mean, they're a very stoic, stiff upper lipped bunch, so that does work. But I mean, that wasn't.
There's no segue. Piece.
No, there isn't. Well, we can talk about history. I mean, I, for anyone who doesn't know already, you remember I was just a nerdy history buff growing up. Revolutionary.
Oh, past tense or like just like
you have to admit it's less so nowadays, but growing up was the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the French and Indian War.
Yeah, that's true.
And all that good jazz. So there was a lot of great opportunity to get a bit of history when checking out Station 119. So for those of you who have been living under a rock for the last, 70 years, we as Americans spent a lot of time in England, in the run up to D-Day, in 1944.
There's no facts behind that at
no,
all.
No. Gotta blame the deep state for that, right? Absolutely no. Yep. Whatever. Anyway, so fun side fact: the last port of departure for the D-Day fleet. So as the American troops were rallying and gathering. And getting ready to make the trip across the Atlantic Ocean to England, where they would then set up base and train for the eventual drop into Normandy on D-Day. Portland, Maine, of all places, our home sweet home, was the last port of call
really
for the D-Day fleet before they went over the way. So it's somewhere, and I'm looking for this, but somewhere there is a photo of the D-Day fleet. Amassing here
right next
in
to Casco
Bay, right next to Ruskies. There's guys rolling in, sailors in their little caps. Just
anyway, keep going.
Anyway, so World War II, there were in the preparation for the invasion and the bombing of German occupied, Nazi occupied France, we had bases. Everywhere, all over England, they were great hosts. They set up so that we could set up air bases all over the place. And one of these places was in Suffolk, England. Now, Suffolk is about an hour and change north of London Victoria Station. Not London Victoria, London Liverpool Street. You take the train north out of there.
Obviously,
and you're in beautiful countryside in no time at all. So, in Suffolk, there were a load of air bases, and okay. And there still are. You can actually roam around, and there's a great reverence for this time period because, for obvious reasons, it was a turning point in the living memory of a lot of people over there. So I got to fly over to England to see friends I used to sail with, very close friends, very lovely people, and many who live up in Suffolk, which we've talked about before when we had our month of Elgar. Oh, not Elgar, Benjamin Britten.
It's fine.
I mean, there's only, five people in England anyway? It's perfect. So But Suffolk is gorgeous. And we were there. I was visiting my godkids, and we did great things. Like, we took them to school in the morning in this beautiful country school in the middle of a field. And it was sunny and green and amazing. And then we'd pick them up and we'd do great things like barbecue and play in the fields and stuff. But while the
kids... And this is in England.
But while... I know, right? But while the kids were at school, we did the responsible adult things like go to local breweries.
As you should.
As one does. And near these guys in Suffolk is a brewery called Station 119. And that is the name of... Actually, it's the name of an airbase nearby, but not actually the name of the nearest U.S. Air Force airbase in the area. So these guys, we were there on a fairly quiet day. We got to meet all the owners and the brewers, and it was fantastic. And they originally started brewing in their garden shed, and their garden shed was closest to USAF Station 119. If you were actually going to look at the closest airbase to where they moved to when they got the brewery, when they actually moved from homebrewing in the backyard to their site, the nearest airbase, if you're detail oriented, would have been Station 117. But we at Bock2Bock are never sticklers for detail, so we said screw it, because their beer was so good, Kev. Their beer was so good, man. Like that, it was delicious. So these guys got inspired. They knew a bit about brewing, but we talked to them. They had gone on a full-on road trip at the West Coast of the U.S. So they had flown to the U.S. and they started driving up the coast and stopping at all these breweries. And at each one, they think they got the fuller picture of the U.S. craft beer brewing culture, which was they would arrive at a place and there would be these friendly people in these great tasting rooms with activities and food trucks and all these great things. And those people, those breweries would say, oh, you think our stuff's good? Go 2 miles down the road, check out these guys. So it really emphasized that although there's obviously commercial competition in any of the brewing industry, our craft beer industry, no matter where you are in the nation,
they make community out of it.
Yeah, there is a community. And we've talked about this before here in Portland, Maine, when Gagan Brothers,
was Rising Tide. When Rising Tide moved, Lone Pine, like the two of them like worked together.
When 4th Street moved down
But Gagan was, you're right, Gagan Brothers as well, up in Orono.
Everybody, or Bangor, at one, sorry. Well, and everyone at One Industrial Way has helped out everybody else. When Bissell moved to their new spot down by Thompson's Point.
That community was a cornerstone for all the breweries together.
Because everybody here, I think everybody nationwide realizes that there's power in community, which is, it was one of the strengths of this whole thing. So these guys had, these men and women had started a brewery named after the Station 119, and all the beers are centered around these incredible animals that had served in World War II, and the stories are out of this world. Like
very odd animal choices, as we mentioned earlier.
We're going to get to them in a second. But just a quick note. So we mentioned before that they were in an industrial park. And a lot of folks, I remember as we drove there with the friends I was staying with, we commented like, oh, this is such an odd spot for a brewery. But we're thinking on the way we've talked about this before, when the magazine, the Atlantic did a piece years ago on a couple that had flown around the USA in a single engine plane 3 or 4 years after the economic recession in 2008. They just took a year and they did a look at all the towns that had been affected, and the ones that had recovered fully, I forget which episode we talked about this in, but those towns all had in common craft brewing. And the reason was you had these people who were starting a business that has a lot of overhead up front, you know, massive brewing gear and tanks and stainless steel and insurance and all this stuff. And when you start a business like that, you can't go downtown. You have to go to the outskirts of town because that's where rent's cheaper. So automatically your property's relegated to the outskirts, but that's exactly what draws people out there. So now people are going out to you over time, and that's building up that local community, that local economy. And all of a sudden, like we've seen it right here in Portland, Maine, yeah, where East Bayside with Rising Tide and 4th Street and the zoo and all these folks down that way and Urban Farm Fermentary. 10 years ago, there, we remember visiting you, Kev, when you were living here, mom, dad, and I.
You don't go there back then.
You went to Rising Tide and they were...
No, Rising Tide wasn't a thing back then.
Like Nathan, the owner, was there behind a counter with two t-shirts and it was like, hey, you guys want a tour? And we were the only ones there and we tried the Ishmael Copper Red and that was it. And like that was... But now look at that street. It's bustling. And that's the whole idea behind craft brewing is... You put up a lot of money for overhead. You go to the outskirts because you can't afford anything else. And then you, over time, you build a community around you. And it's amazing how it revitalizes an economy. So that's my little rant on how craft brewing helps the nation's economy. But, okay, but so... The particular
so what's the beer you want to talk about today?
Yeah, we took a little while to get to this, but it's so worth it because it was such a good time.
This is clearly a 10-minute rant.
Oh, it's a great rant, though. So the particular beer we wanted to attach to this piece, because Kev was sitting there, we're talking about this. We're like, what's the piece like? Well, it's heavy. Okay, well, we need a heavy beer. And having just come back from these guys, the Black IPA at this spot is so... Right up this alley with a beautiful, dark, flavorful, delicious, kick up the seat of the pants beer. That this is what I had in mind, and we haven't done many black IPAs, and because they're not a widely brewed thing really in the scheme of things, but this black IPA that Station 119 produces is called the Roscoe. It's a Roscoe. Here we go. Talking about. We're jumping right in with the crazy beers, or the crazy animals that they had. So Roscoe was the mascot of the 390th Airborne. So this bear was donated by the residents of Montana. And I think we just have to take a moment to give a shout out to Montana.
So Montana sent a bear from Montana in the United States.
To England. Because that's what you do when you're from Montana.
Because it's Thursday, you have nothing else to do.
Yeah, honestly, if anyone listening has relatives from Montana, I would check closely your Christmas presents when December rolls around. Anyway, this was a bear that was donated to the residents of Montana. So he was named Roscoe, and he came with him to Parham, Suffolk, which is just around the corner. So he didn't fly missions. But this guy, this bear, would just stroll through the village. He would walk into church on Sundays. He'd go into the pub. He was just this bear that would stroll around town.
And the bear is the label of the Black IPA.
Oh, yeah. All their labels are the animals. The animals themselves. So
I'm looking at it right now. It's...
And it's great. The artwork's fantastic. And again, folks, I can't stress this enough. Like, you can't buy this in stores over here in the USA. But if you go to England, and I do recommend you do, whether you agree with Brexit or not, scoot up to Suffolk. There are two places in England I would live. One of them is Cornwall, and one of them is Suffolk. And it is beautiful. And check out Station 119. They are they're just run by great people with really good beer. But just quickly, some of the other animals they relate to. You've got, oh my goodness. I mean, the one that we just talked about while we listened to Mozart was their Session IPA. So
with Lady Mo?
Donkey? Yeah, Lady Mo. So they do a Session IPA, and all their beers are very kind of USA-centric just because that's where they got a lot of the inspiration from, according to them, when they got inspired to launch this by a lot of the brews that they encountered. So... the Lady Mo was a donkey that the 96th Bombardment Group discovered in an Algerian slum. And a lot of folks forget that there's a lot of fighting in North Africa. They discovered this donkey in a slum, and it accompanied the crew back to England, but via Bordeaux, which they bombed on the way, which made Lady Mo the only donkey ever to fly on a combat mission, like ever. And then she had, they say she adapted well to her new home, and that there's a, this is the home was called Snetterton Heath. Now, quick note on England. They have conquered the world. There was a point where the sun never set on the British Empire, but they do have to work a bit on their names. Mm-hmm. Because
not great.
They conquered the world, but it's like, what do you name this town? Oh, it's Piddleton. So we
look at there.
So, they'll so there. Just guys take note, work on the names, but, their pale ale at 5%, which was really good. So we ordered a bunch of, they're still big on growler culture over there. We haven't obviously, in the US we've kind of moved on a bit from growler culture, but, we ordered three growlers while we were there of the pale, the New England IPA and the black IPA. And all of them were stellar. But the pale ale was named after a carrier pigeon named G.I. Joe,
yep,
which saved the lives of thousands of soldiers. So you had radio equipment down, and this pigeon was the only means of communication. So he flew 20 miles in 20 minutes, which, I mean, and I talked with the owners, and like, we need to kind of check on this a little bit because that's 60 miles an hour. But I am no authority on how fast pigeons fly. So, so he flew 20 miles in 20 minutes to deliver this message. And the pigeon received the Dickin Medal for bravery, which is, you know, I'm 36 and I've never
received. Are they sure it's the same pigeon? how do you know?
Is it like the goldfish you had growing up? They moved to a farm upstate. Yeah, right.
But I'm looking ahead, like the other beer, like the double IPA is named after Bing.
Bing,
Bing the dog.
The Alsatian Collie Cross.
Yeah, then there's the cat, Smokey Joe.
Quick note, so Bing parachuted into Normandy with the 13th Parachute Battalion. So trained to go after the enemy and protect, basically like a modern day canine unit, just go after folks and protect owners.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
And I'm like, look at the IPA, which named for a Jeep, which was the wild coyote that they had. It's awesome. Like it's very simple, but it's really great approach to how like. Remembering history and preserving it through their beers.
Yeah.
In a unique way. It's really, really cool.
They're great. I gotta say that the tasting room's really, really small. They're growing. They're at that exciting point that I think we've seen a lot of breweries work through here in Portland because of such a great beer culture. But if you're in England, if you're in Suffolk, check out Station 119, especially in the summertime. They've got, they're doing hosted dinners. They're doing food trucks. They're doing games. They're doing trivia nights. I feel like if you're visiting, if you're on holiday, you're over there. If there's any way you want to follow,
what's the travel time from like London and Suffolk? Like,
From London, Liverpool to Ipswich was like an hour 20, I think.
That by train or bus?
By train. Oh, just okay. Take train up. It's easy. And then, and if our friends picking you up or just drive up, the motorway is really, really quick. But get there. It's a great spot to get to know people. Especially if you're a craft brew fan, encounter people, have the conversations. There's a guy there. I forget his name, but they told us about him. He's in his late 80s and he cycles down every day and is there till closing and has like his pints and then cycles home every night. Like he's this great English old boy. So you will meet every kind of local possible at this place. I want to meet him. Oh, he sounds great. I want to call him Randy. I don't think that's his name, but I want to call him Randy.
That's his American name because there's no Englishman named Randy at all. All
right. So long story short, Station 119. Check him out on Instagram, on Facebook, and online.
On Instagram, they are literally Station 119. It's pretty simple. And then it's Station 119.co.uk for the website. It's just, man, like awesome stories today.
They were a lot of fun to visit, but, and on top of Mozart's Requiem, I mean, my goodness,
it's a heavy week as far as what we approached, but a lot of history, a lot of great stories behind how these things are made. And it's really kind of, it's really inspiring to see like people preserve history in one minute. Like they could have like let his Requiem die, but someone wanted to finish it off. And for Station 119, they wanted to remember these historical missions and they did it through the beer. It's really a unique idea. So on a different note, next week is just everything we've not done before.
What do you mean?
So next week is we're going to focus on Hindemith viola sonatas.
I'm not going to be here for that because it involves viola. I'm going to be gone. It's going to be just Kevin. Kevin's going to be here talking about Hindemith viola sonatas. Okay,
so I have to give credit to our previous guest, Drew Alexander Ford, or that viola kid.
Who is the coolest guy in the world. He is the best.
I'm just played the Grammys last week.
Did he?
He did.
You know, a year ago today, we were at the Grammys.
We were. That happened.
That's crazy.
It was crazy.
No joke. Kevin and I were sitting in the Grammys a year ago today.
And now we're here talking about Hindemith. So it's really just progress, everybody. Progress is what makes things happen. Anyway, next week's episode is about the Hindemith viola sonatas, which you think would be absolutely boring, but they are brilliant. They are obscure, but under the right light, you will love them. They are incredible.
I'll wait to hear them. Just saying.
Well, okay, well, fine.
But until that moment. Be sure to follow Bach to Bach on Spotify to get notified of the latest episodes.
And keep the conversation going on Instagram with us and follow us on all social media platforms at Bach to Bach. That's B-A-C-H-T-O-B-O-C-K. Cheers and keep listening.